Hey there, I'm Dorian, and I want to welcome you to Highway to Scale, a podcast in which we explore the ins and outs of business success, and where we cover topics like validating business ideas, exploring different management styles, building products, launching them on the market, raising capital, and scaling your business. If this is your first time listening to Highway to Scale, here's a big fat welcome to our little community. And while we're getting to know each other, I want to ask you to click on that subscribe button and add us to your podcast playlists so you'll get notified when we publish new interviews. On the other hand, if you've been following us since the previous season, you know that we love and appreciate your support, so it's amazing to have you back with us as we explore new companies and their business strategies. Now, before we get any deeper and jump into the main topic, let me take a few seconds to thank the sponsor of this episode, Media Toolkit. Media Toolkit is the fastest way to find out when something important about your business is mentioned online. It is a media monitoring and an analytics tool that gathers information from hundreds of millions of internet sources, and it notifies you when someone mentions your brand, your company, your competitors, or anything else you want to track. And the best part? It's doing it all in real time, so you can react in an instant. To me, a marketing guy, Media Toolkit has been the go-to media monitoring tool for almost 6 years now. And I'm using it because it saves me a bunch of time. I don't have to spend an hour, two, or sometimes even more scouring through online sources just to see if a media outlet published a story about our company. I set the keywords, I set the queries, and I know that my Media Toolkit app will start buzzing as soon as something is posted. But a great thing about Media Toolkit is that it doesn't have to be just for business, because you can literally track anything online. Here's a fun fact. At the start of 2022, I secured a kick-ass apartment in the center. And if you've ever been searching for a new apartment, you know how much of a pain that can be and how quickly all the top ones are gone. Well, for this one, I booked a tour exactly 2 minutes after the ad was posted. I set the Media Toolkit app to send me a push notification as soon as they get a hit that matches my keywords. I opened the listing, liked what I saw, called the realtor, and we signed the papers the very next day. As simple as that. So, if you want to start making better business decisions by getting access to relevant information at the exact moment that you need it, go to mediatoolkit.com, register for a new account, choose a starter plan in the payments menu, and enter the code HIGHWAY. With this, you'll get a whole month completely free. That's mediatoolkit.com, and the code is HIGHWAY, in all caps. We only go big on this podcast. Well, okay, enough promotion. Now back to the show. In today's episode, I'm joined by Henrik, who is the co-founder and CEO of Certainly, a conversational AI platform which helps e-commerce brands around the world to automate their customer service, improve online user experience, and boost conversion rates through personalized conversations. With its no-code chatbot builder, the Certainly conversational AI platform offers a fun and easy building experience. The product offers high-quality user experiences across different channels, seamless integrations with dozens of business systems, and a powerful proprietary AI that detects any language and offers ready-to-use content in 14-plus languages. Certainly is trusted by brands such as Carlsberg, Tiger of Sweden, Booking.com, The Fragrance Shop, Trustpilot, Six Silk, and Zendesk. As for Henrik, he is an e-commerce specialist, a tech nerd, and a multiple startup founder. Henrik has worked in e-commerce tech for over 10 years, and during this time, he founded three companies that aim to accelerate growth for companies doing business online. Certainly is Henrik's latest and greatest endeavor, and he founded it in 2017 together with his co-founder Dario Rodriguez. In addition to that, Henrik regularly keynotes as an AI expert, both internationally and nationally, and is an advisor to the Danish government on the subject. In this podcast, Henrik will tell us more about improving customer experiences and e-commerce conversions through conversations, the importance of understanding the strengths and weaknesses between different members of the co-founding team, and why a CEO's description of the company vision is an important aspect of raising capital in the early rounds. So let's cut the intro and let's jump right into the episode to see what Henrik can teach us about building a business. Henrik, it's so great to have you on Highway to Scale. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm super happy to be here, Dorian. Thanks for inviting
me. Excellent. How are you, man? You doing good?
I'm doing good. I'm here in Copenhagen. The sun is out. It feels like summer is coming soon. And the business is good as well. So that's great.
Nice. I love to hear that. Okay, let's start with the basics. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you decided to start your own company?
It's quite a good, it's a very good question. I think it originally came from when I went to university. I've been at university twice, studying two mm-hmm. different things. Mm-hmm. And I realized there that really what I was doing there, I was learning how to absorb new knowledge and then put it into practice, which was kind of cool. But then I also realized that, hey, I could actually go out and then do something with this tools, whatever I have just learned. And mm-hmm. by chance and design, I was an opportunity for me to start working as some freelancer stuff on the side of my studies. Okay. And then that sparked my interest in, this is really interesting. I love that more. I love that how to basically build a product or service that someone else would like to buy. I think that was really interesting. And I could feel how much of what I had learned in university actually helped me there. So mm-hmm. yeah, it was something like that.
Great, great. So how did the idea behind Certainly come to life?
Yeah, that's also a very good question. In my previous company, we built a mobile app tech to essentially help e-commerce businesses show some banners in some different apps and then get them to get users to download their own shopping app and, you know,
cool.
And all that stuff. And we had one of the largest European retailers as customer, and we gave them a ton of new users, and I could also see how much money they were spending with us, but mm-hmm. also how much friction there was in, you know, you know how that is, right?
When
you have to click a banner, download an app, set up an account.
So many steps,
Exactly. And there was so much friction in that. And at the same time, there were so many users using WhatsApp and Messenger. So we started thinking about, how can we actually get our customers' product directly into those apps where their users are? And then it was from that perspective. And then that, because it's a messaging app, then that turned into, it needs to be a flow like a conversation. And that means suddenly you had this kind of, you know, chatbot mm-hmm. conversation AI experience. But that was in the very early days before anyone really understood. So what is a good conversation? How do you drive sales via conversation? This was more a very, the same naive way of thinking, hey, all the users are in this app. My customers will want to sell to them. Why don't we get their products into that app without thinking about the medium as such and how that is very different from other experiences? So that was mm-hmm. the foundation mm-hmm. for Certainly. And today it's very different. So 99.9% of all the volumes through our platform is from our customers' own web properties. That means their own web shop, their own apps, etc. Where messaging apps, anything from Instagram to WhatsApp to Messenger is more where they maybe do some support or engage their customers a little bit. But the brands we work with, they want to have their customers on their own web properties because mm-hmm. they can control the customer experience and have more access to the right kind of data, etc.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how your product works? What can your users, you know, those e-commerce sites that implement your software onto their websites, what can they expect to get?
I think you nailed it pretty much in your opening, anyway, you explained mm-hmm. about Certainly. We do three things. Number one, we help you have more conversations with more of your online visitors. Right. So if I asked you mm-hmm. if you could have more conversations with more of your visitors, would you understand them better? And then could you use that understanding to help them buy more of the right products?
True.
I think you,
true.
Yeah, exactly. You say yes. Intuition said yes. And then that's also what our data shows. So we enable you to do that. And of course, we do that via conversation AI experience. So enabling more conversations with more users. And number two, by doing that, we enable you as a merchant to have access to hundreds of thousands or millions of conversations that you have directly with your visitors. And that's very different from mm-hmm. the guesswork that comes from looking in Google Analytics and trying to figure out what they want. So direct access to their data. And that's really important because I'm the same Henrik, but I have different needs. Today, I'm there to buy that T-shirt I'm wearing now because we have this podcast recording where, coincidentally, you can't see me. but tomorrow I'm there again because I forgot my fiance's birthday and I need something fast here now. Same hand regret if you need. And only if you have a conversation with you can understand that. So number two, gathering insights from that data that the e-commerce organization can take action on. And then number three, we're then obviously building a conversation AI and automation that enables you to then also have a AI-powered sales conversations with your visitors, which again leads to higher sales rates, higher conversion rates, etc. So three things, enable you to have more conversations. Number two, enable you to take action on the data. And number three, enable you to have unlimited sales conversations with your visitors, like one-to-one. And that's the fundamental to delivering that kind of hyper-personalization that we do.
Yeah. I completely agree. It's amazing because you combine data with chatbots and it basically gives you all of the information that you need to tailor your approach to specific users. But it is at the same time extremely scalable. You don't need to have, 10x people in your customer support team because you have that chatbot that's basically making it all possible.
Yes, exactly. And that's a classic scenario, right? How you can do your customer support more efficient. But also the agents that are then in your customer support, because they don't have to answer a lot of the standard questions, they can then spend their time on what's more valuable as well for them and for the organization.
True.
That is absolutely true. But it's also thinking of it like you're able to take your best salesperson. If you have a physical store, think about it as you can take your best salesperson and then creating a digital twin of that and then having unlimited conversations with unlimited visitors. And that's intuition just says that's a pretty good idea. And that's essentially what we're doing.
Amazing. So you started your company in 2016. When you look at your company from that beginnings up until now, what milestones would you single out as some of the most important ones?
Also a good question. So of course, incorporating it in 2016, I think it was October 16, was important. But then it was from then the next 2 years, it was more of a project just trying to understand what's going on and trying to understand this new type of technology and dialogue that you can have with users. So for us, we don't really count the first 2 years on that. The next big milestone was, of course, when Dario, my co-founder, joined full-time during 18. And then from sort of a product and go-to-market perspective, one of the milestones early on was that we could see that there was a gap in providing this type of conversation AI for all the smaller European languages. So we open sourced a bunch of large language models that were really good at the Nordic languages to help sort of accelerate. And they have been downloaded hundreds of thousands of times on GitLab and Hugging Face.
Great.
But that really got us on the map for, hey, these guys are really good at this Nordic European languages. So then we were approached by Zendesk, which is a huge, I think $2 billion now AR company in customer support. And they wanted to partner with us because we could solve some of the things that they could.
Amazing.
And then of course more milestones like the first enterprise customer, the first time we drove revenue and all these things.
So you mentioned your co-founder. One of the questions I always like to ask my guests who started a company with a co-founder or have a co-founder at the time, how do you ensure that the relationship between the two of you stays strong? Because a lot of people say, yeah, I think I'm going to, start solo. Because what if I start with a co-founder and the relationship, goes south and something breaks between us? How will that affect the company? How do you ensure that you're still going strong and, going full steam ahead?
That is certainly a risk. Of course, it is like with any relationship, also with your, relationship with your partner at home, there's a risk that it goes south over time. And especially when you're building something here, it's easy when the times are good, but if you hit bottlenecks or this, you know, so we've been through first COVID and now the world climate that we're in now. And of course, that's where you really test the resilience of your relationship. I would say we were a little bit fortunate because Guy and I had been working together for 3 years or so prior to Certainly, because he was the CTO of my previous company.
Great.
So we always had a relationship and we had a good understanding of each other's strengths and weaknesses, I think. And then now it's we try to a little bit divide and conquer. We're very knowledgeable about it, each other's strengths and weaknesses. So I know exactly, I typically know how Dadi would respond to any type of situation, for good and bad. And he's a, you know, he's just a person. So he has qualities that are like superpowers. And then he also have his kryptonite, right, where he could do better.
So
and
so yeah.
Exactly. And so have I. And being able to be knowledgeable about that and open about it is, I think, is very important. And then we do, I work primarily out of Copenhagen. Dario, you usually do that as well. But we have an office in Madrid where Dario is originally from, where we have most of our engineering. So he's obviously there a lot. So what we try to do, or we once a week, we set aside to just a one-on-one where we just go through whatever is top of mind. And that could be business stuff, it could be personal stuff, whatever. Where that meeting is more about making sure that we are aligned and connected, and how is the other one feeling? Is there anything that's bothering them, etc.? And that's really helpful. And then also trying to be very intellectual, honest about yourself, but also the situation, the challenges that the company is in. We have this in the company. We have this thing where there's a famous Jay-Z rap song called 99 Problems. And I don't want to say the rest of the lecture, but it's a way to say, look, there will always be 99 problems. The kind of the sum is always there, but they will change over time as we grow through them, right? But that gives you a good way of, I think, working together and you know, working through all these different problems. Sorry, did I answer your question?
I love that mindset because you, as a lot of my other guests, you know, stress out the importance of trust, the importance of knowing each other's strengths and weaknesses, because then you can, you know, fill in the gaps. If you are, you know, good at something, your co-founder doesn't have to be. He can focus on some other things that maybe you are not as proficient at. And you have that sort of a yin and yang situation where you have a perfect, you know, combination of the skills that are needed to keep the company going and push it forward.
Exactly. And then we don't have too much overlap on what our core skills are. So then that means that Dario can do more of what he does really well without me second guessing every single thing because I trust him completely and vice versa. That also means that sometimes I take some decisions or do some things that are not great, right? And then, but then that's also fine because we move forward.
That's the reality of, you know, building a company. Not everything will always be good. I mean, there isn't such a time as, you know, where you can say, yeah, it's just smooth sailing. It's always a bit of a chaos, and it's always a bit of, you know, problems and challenges that you need to work through.
Always.
So when you look at Certainly now, what would you say you're currently focused on the most? What are some of your next steps that you wish to take with the company?
We're very focused on different strategic initiatives. We're talking about conversational AI for e-commerce, etc. June, July last year, we made the choice of only focusing on e-commerce. That meant that we cut away a lot of our pipeline. It meant that we are not a platform suitable for a bank or a municipality, etc. Mm-hmm. And we did that because we could see that sort of being general purpose and catered for everyone was so very, very complex. Anything from your go-to-market to your sales, to your product development, to support.
Yep.
Focusing on e-commerce helped us a lot. And in every metric, you can see that manifest itself. So the focus is on keeping that focus and keep chipping away sort of the different layers of that onion to somehow be even more focused.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing for us to focus on. Then we're also focusing on our product, of course. We are us and others in the space, our colleagues, competitors.
Yep.
When we all built our platforms, no one really knew how to create a interface where you basically construct conversations. So we have learned a ton from it. Some stuff that mm-hmm. we got really right, really correct, and some of the stuff that we could improve even more on. So we are, our product side, we're focusing very much on building that into our product, especially also with focus on e-commerce and we can, and on how our customers are adopting the product. And then on a macro level, again, we just come out of 2 years with COVID, and now we're in this climate and this war, Ukraine invasion and inflation, all that stuff. So obviously we're also trying to navigate that and as well as our customers and our colleagues, you know, and our shareholders, investors, everyone is trying to understand that. So that's also very top of mind to understand how that may impact or even accelerate some of the stuff that we do.
Can you tell me a little bit more, how did, the pandemic affect your company? Because there are a lot of companies, I mean, COVID pushed forward, a sort of a widespread digitalization of businesses. So did you have a positive impact because of that or a negative one?
We had a net positive impact. One of the things that we saw in the beginning was that our sales cycles made no sense to look at the average any longer, because either the sales cycles were like 1-2 days. Mm-hmm. Our customer said, hey, this is like Black Friday every day. We need something here now. Or they said, no, we have no idea. We have to figure out what this is, what's going on here before we are going to introduce new products. that was one. Number two, we were raising money. Just in when COVID happened, rollout across Europe in February, March, that time. So, of course, that was a little extra stressful to be out there. Look, we're raising money. We even got the term sheet, et cetera. But everything was delayed for another 6 months simply because, again, people had to figure out what does this all mean. So net positive on the business side, but it delayed the funding, but also then our people in our organization. We have always been a hybrid remote company, and suddenly we were 100% remote. So helping people feel that when they were working, that was a fun, secure, interesting space to be in. So at least when they were working, they didn't have to think so much about what was going on in the world. So that was a big topic for us as well.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned funding, can you tell me a little bit more about the process? You closed your last round in 2020. It was around 5 million euros, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how it all went down? What kind of investors were you looking to attract? Let's say, what kind of advice can you share for some young startup CEOs who are looking to, go into that process and raise their first rounds?
Yeah. So when you're out doing angel investment, right? So that's before you get any venture firm. And angel investments is sometimes also before you have any revenue.
At
that time, it's 100% on you as a CEO to be able to share the vision and explain it in a compelling way, because you don't necessarily have any data. Then when you get the first venture round in, whether that is a seed round or even a round, then it's still 90 or 80% you as a CEO to be able to explain the vision, the mission, et cetera, in a very compelling way that they understand. But at that time, you will also have some revenue, some data. So your data needs to be presented in a way that, of course, is not, you're not lying, but you need to present it in a way that backs up your story and where you want to go. And on the other side, on the VC side or angel side, they also know that at your company at that stage, they know that, again, the 99 problems are there and you haven't figured out most of them, which is fine. So just, you need to tell the truth, but you need to tell it in a very, very compelling way. And don't do the thing of, you know, hiding or cheating on the numbers, so that doesn't work. It's better to say this is where we are, we know why we are here, this is how we're going to move past that, etc. And then the second point is, it's always your fault. If someone passes on you, it is your fault. You can't blame it on some venture partner or someone who they didn't understand you well enough. Well, from their side, they may be talking to 5-10 potential companies they want to invest in a day.
Yep.
So they don't have the time. So even if they could, even if they would, they didn't have the time to go deeper. So you, on each of them. So it's on you to be as good as possible at explaining why they should invest in you and why you are going to give them a good return on the investment, because that is what they're looking for.
True. Yeah. In the end, they want, you know, to have that return on what they invested in you a little bit extra. And of course, to help you grow as a company.
Of course, because they want their investment to come back. And of course, they are people, right? So they want you to succeed as well. But a VC firm is generally, is essentially a group of people that themselves have been out. They have gone out and raised money from let's say, pension funds and others that have given them some money that they have allocated to some more risky investment. And then it's the VC funds, the people working there, they are like an allocator of funds. So they have to live up to the expectations of their investors. And their investors are just looking at, this is more risk, but can we get a higher return on investment going from the money in our VC fund versus if we invested more in the public market? So it is just about that. At its core, it's about that.
It's what they say. They're always looking, you know, to 10x their investment. That seems to be like the mindset of the VCs.
Of course, and that's because they have funded 9 other startups that didn't succeed.
Yeah,
so, they failed. Yeah, exactly. Or failed, you know, it can still be a very good company, but they didn't provide that return that they needed. So that's why they need to do it like that. It's not because they're evil. It's just the math behind it and the statistics behind it.
It's all about the numbers, yeah. Now, we've talked a little bit about your company, we talked a little bit about your product. I want to focus a little bit more on your industry. Can you tell me, how do you see the potential for growth of your company within it?
I think that whatever total addressable market I state will not be as big as it is in reality. E-commerce as an industry is growing, but it's growing, you know, on the parameters or the under the condition that is there today. But with technology like ours, and not only but in the industry broader, conversational AI, natural language understanding, pairing that with, like I said, sales, AI-powered sales conversation, that unlocks a lot of opportunity. And because you can get more direct data, that means that the businesses can iterate on that a lot faster. And that will accelerate e-commerce. Then another one is also offline and online is merging. And at the same time, you have this thing, right, the metaverse. And I think essentially it will all blend together to being just the next step is probably digital commerce, where digital or technology will be involved in whether you're buying in a web shop, you're buying in a metaverse, or you're buying in a physical store. And then at the end, it will all just be commerce, because the technology, the digital technologies and tools have been immersed so much on the physical world that it's kind of blend together. And that's why I think everyone is very bullish on the opportunity in e-commerce because of all that. And then because our type of technology is just unlocking new ways of creating shopping experiences in general.
So what do you see as some of the, let's say, biggest challenges that you'll have to tackle if you want to scale your company?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges is the adoption of the technology. It's still new to most. And when it's new to most, most people get it wrong, right? So it's our responsibility to help more and more companies get it right and get it right faster and faster. And that's the standard technology adoption. It's not necessarily us. Like when the whole world had to get a website or web shop, or the world's businesses need to get an app, you know, they had to go through motion to figure it out. I think that's the key thing. And then number two, it is extremely hard to construct conversations like in a decision tree or using a mix of AI and then decision trees. You can only take it so far. So the next step change will be as our technologies and similar enable that to be more and more just automated and handled by an AI system. The analogy is, again, a physical store. If you have a physical store, there's a big difference whether you are hiring a person that has never sold anything before, or you're hiring an experienced salesperson where you just need to teach them your products and your return policies, as an example. Where a lot of the market right now, you still have to teach that new person everything from scratch. But as our technology and others become better at just giving you that out-of-the-boxness salesperson that have experience, then of course that is really interesting. So that's one of the challenges that are being tackled right now, not only by us, but also other companies.
So when we talk about other companies that are doing the same or similar thing, what would you say that, you know, makes your company stand out from the crowd? What makes you better?
Yeah. I think it comes down to focus and categorization. So there's a lot of, let's say, bot platforms out there that are focused on customer service, and they are focusing on customer service across any kind of sector. That means that they serve a bank, a municipality, a website, etc. And that's great. But in my opinion, you can only get so far, because if the quality of your system and your AI, etc., is a function of the data that you get in and the quality and the similarity of that data, then it's really difficult. And also in your go-to-market, if you have to know how a bank precisely needs to use a type of tool and a web shop and a municipality and a XYZ, it's really difficult. But many focus on that area because customer service is a very nice one to fix. We focus on e-commerce, and we focus on revenue. The reason why we focus on revenue is because that's the foundation for any type of business. It's driving revenue, right? But also revenue is a cross-team collaboration. It's a team sport. So the different teams in an organization, e-commerce organization, from marketing, customer support, e-commerce, etc., business intelligence, they need to work together. So, and that's the tool that we provide them to do. Whereas many others focus on horizontal within a specific functional area like customer support, or even some tools that are from marketing, and then everything they do evolve around helping that functional area in organization be successful. We do the opposite. We say, look, it's e-commerce, it's revenue, and because it's e-commerce revenue, we have to cater to customer service, to e-commerce, to marketing, to business intelligence. And that's very deliberate. And as far as we can see, that provides a ton of value for the companies that we work with. And it gives us a very different position in the market as opposed to most others.
Yeah, I completely understand. You are highly focused on that one niche that you're serving, and you can go extremely deep into understanding their needs and what your software needs to provide.
Exactly.
When it comes to the growth of your company and when it comes to your target markets, are you now available globally, or are you currently focused on some specific countries where you offer your services?
We have customers in 17 different markets across the world, and that's anything from the Americas to Europe to to EMEA. So inbound, we can help anyone, but in our outbound activities, I mean our sales and marketing, we focus on a few markets where we can see that it makes sense for us. And the reason why we do that is because yes, the whole world could be our any business anywhere in the world that runs an e-commerce store
could be our client.
Exactly, but we cannot win every one of them at the same time. So we focus on specific markets at a time. And right now, it's very much the it's very much UK and the US where we're growing really fast. And then, of course, historically the Nordics, because we're born in Denmark, so the Nordics has been a good starting point for us.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, some of the differences of offering your services here in Europe versus, let's say, the US? Some of the tactics that you need to use, or some of the, you know, activations that you need to conduct on those different markets to get new clients?
Generally speaking, here in the Nordics, we are less willing to pay, and we want to haggle more on the price. And we want to do shorter pilots, right? Which is fine. I mean, I'm also if you want to sell me something, then you'll see how I haggle also on the price. Whereas in the UK and especially in the US, we see that companies are more willing to invest deeper upfront. That means more money, longer commitment, but also larger teams. Mm-hmm. So they take it in and they make a real effort to adopt the technology. That of course informs how we go about it. In the US especially, there's also there's in Europe as well, but in US especially, there's a high focus on accessibility, right? So they want to make sure that they're very accessible to any type of online user or the store. So of course we need to. That's one of the USPs that we then bring forward. Look, we are that as well, and we can help you provide that. That's just one example.
Yep.
And then there's different. What type of technologies do they use the most? What about support? Our support, can we support them on their time zones, etc.? So there's things like that as well.
Okay, Hendrik. Now I want to focus a little bit more on you. You as a founder and a CEO. Can you tell me what are you focused on the most?
Of course. And that has been a journey for me as well. So when you start, you need to do everything. So when we launched, I did everything from selling to help design product, to do payroll, to recruiting, you know, so many different things.
Classic startup story, yeah.
Yeah, of course you have to. But then you it's very important that at some point you switch away from that and then focus on where you're really, really strong. I believe I'm strong in specific areas. So it means that influences, for example, the organization and how that is set up. Because then who do you get on? Who do you invite on your team to help solve some of those things that I, as a founder, I could not do great enough. And even if I tried to do it, it would be mediocre. So how do you get people on board who can do that? And so I can focus on what I believe I do best. And that, for me, that is understanding the strategy, getting the right people on board, and helping the direction of product and the team in general.
What would you say would be, let's say, some of your successes or failures that really shaped you as a leader? It's a difficult one, I know, yeah.
No, it's more about shit. There's been so many things. In my previous company, people we had there they were taught everything by me or us who founded it. So I meant that it was very top down. So I was involved in very much everything, which was great. But with certainly I wanted to do a different approach where I wanted to decentralize as much as possible, have as many different kinds of people on board with these specific skills so we could move forward. But that in return also is just difficult because I think we have 20 something different nationalities and all walks of life, and they have very different needs and demands and wants. To get that team to go together in the right direction is difficult. And I've had some big failures on that where I realized that how I could do better. I can use one example. We just had a team offsite, where the entire team, everyone flew everyone to Tenerife. It's an island in Spain. And there we had a team exercise where we switched jobs. So everyone got a job from someone else was responsible for the company. So I was a back end developer. and the backend developer became the CEO. And I was then tasked with maintaining part of our product. And suddenly everything was failing and I had to do some quick, you know, bug fixing. It was super stressful. And then at the same time, the CEO called for an all hands and stood up there. And that was the backend developer playing me as CEO, talking about mission and vision and strategy and all that stuff. And I could just feel how it was a very humbling experience because I could feel how that interrupted just what I had, this thing I need to fix here and now. But then suddenly that guy is up there talking about all these different things, which is fine, but I need to fix this now. So that made me realize that, yes, I need to do that and inspire, etc. But I don't think I need to do it as much as I thought I should. So I ended up canceling all my motivational speeches for the entire trip there because it wasn't needed. So that really helped me understand that. And sometimes realizing these things are super humbling and you get embarrassed and it hurts your ego, but it's really good if you manage to respond in a good way to that.
In one way, it's a sort of a great feedback, but in the other, it's an eye-opener. You see what you have been doing, how others in the team perceive you.
Exactly.
Now that you mentioned your team, can you tell me a little bit more about how are you structured? What kind of specialists do you hire at Certainly?
We are a combination of specialists and generalists. The tricky part is to find that right balance, because of course we have specialists, let's say on the engineering team, that is really, really good at backend, and then we have specialists that are really good at UX design. And in sales, we have BDRs and we have AEs, etc. So some of them are very, very specialized. But if you're you're a specialist, then you tend to, that cliche, but then, you know, if all you have is a hammer, then everything looks like a nail. Then you need a generalist to help some of the experts sometimes look at the bigger picture. But at the same time, the generalists need help from the experts in really deeply understanding the problems, the solutions in that area and how to tackle it. So our organization is built up like that. And we have the standard of leadership. We have marketing, sales, customer success, product, etc. And then we have some different specialist teams that help across these different organizations.
And how will you be expanding those teams? Who will be hiring the most, let's say, in 2022?
We definitely want to do more product hires because we are a product company, right? So that can never hurt. We're going to do some more, have more sales. I'm also going to hire some more people in customer success because I think many companies forget that the longest relationship you have with a company is when they become your customer. So that means that the product and customer success is really important, where marketing and sales, very black and white speaking, are more about getting them in the door. So keeping them, it's more of a function of customer success and product. So we focus a lot on that as well. I'm not saying that we're doing a perfect job every time, but I think we know where the importance of it.
And when it comes to hiring those new people, what kind of, let's say, traits or values are you looking for in people who are looking to join, Certainly?
I believe culture is divisive. So you can't have a culture without it repelling someone and attracting someone else. You don't have to have the right quote unquote college degree or university degree. It's more important that you are you're honest about yourself and you're fast at learning, because then you will get you far fast. Then we also try to teach people that we want them to own their failures and be open about it. Looking at the ball instead of the player. But in order to own your failures, you also need to be able to own your successes. And it just seems like it's more difficult for people to say, yes, I did this. And it was a success. It's more difficult than saying, oops, I screwed up. And
true.
For some reason. And so that's really important. And then we have freedom of ideas, but not freedom of implementation. So freedom of ideas means that anyone can surface an idea and want to encourage that. And the best idea kind of wins. So that also means that I can have brilliant ideas, but they can be shut down, so we don't end up doing it. And decides whether something is done or not is the strategy, the direction, etc. So that's why we don't have freedom of implementation. So people that work here needs to be comfortable with that, being able to voice something and say something, but that doesn't mean that then that is going to happen, that it's part of a bigger consideration.
Okay, Hendrik, we are almost done with our time. So I have just two more questions for you. What advice would you give to new startup owners, new CEOs who are just looking to launch their products onto the market? What do they need to know? What do they need to be aware of?
They need to be very aware of that. It's very, very difficult. It's in Denmark, it takes you 10 minutes to set up to register a company, right? Mm-hmm. But then the first couple of years, it's super, super difficult. And I try to navigate by saying, let's say different choices. I say, so what's the worst thing that can happen here? And am I comfortable with that? And then if yes, then you can move forward, even if it's difficult choices. And you will be faced with difficult choices. And then number three, I would say, don't underestimate the power of getting enough sleep and exercising.
It is
true. Really, if you don't sleep enough, you take less good decisions, you are less kind to your surrounding, your hot temper, you etc. So getting enough sleep and exercise gives you the necessary energy and bandwidth to be the best possible version of yourself, so to speak. It sounds fundamental, but those things are really, really important. And then being intellectual honest. So just be honest about whether you have product market fit or not, whether you know how to get new customers in the door or not. And just look at the problem instead of looking at the person. I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, that's a great advice. Be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. What do you really know and what you don't know? This is going to push you forward.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, last thing. Can you tell me what can we expect from you and certainly during this year and the next? What are some of your bigger plans?
Before the end of next year, that we will have the AI system in place. So you can sort of hire our technology and you can have that twin of that salesperson that you have. And you don't have to worry about teaching it anything, wiring up in the right way. All you have to do is give it access to your products and of course, your different business things like return policies, etc. So I think we'll be able to launch that by the end of next year, which is a huge step change. And by doing that, we enable any type of merchant to actually participate in this new type of technology, even a small one, because you don't have to focus on building, you just have to focus on enabling it to sell more of your products.
Great. This all seems, extremely exciting, extremely amazing. I'm really looking forward to seeing you grow.
Certainly.
Okay, Hendrik, we're all done. I want to thank you for joining me on Highway to Scale, for sharing your insights about the industry, about your company, and of course, helping our young CEOs start their companies.
I enjoyed it. And thank you for bringing me on board.
And we are done. If you stuck with us until the end, here are a few key takeaways from this episode that I want you to remember. Number one, if you're raising capital and an angel or a VC passes on you, you need to be humble enough to understand that it's your fault. Investors talk with dozens of companies they potentially invest in, so they don't have the time to go extremely deep into each and every one of them. It's on you to be as good as possible in explaining why they should invest in you and why your company is going to give them a good return on their investment. Number two, focus and categorization are a great way to stand out in the sea of competitors and give your company a stronger position on the market. By focusing on a smaller niche, you can dig deep into the needs of your target customers and build a product that provides them with a ton of benefits as opposed to other options that want to cater to broader audiences. And number three, if you're building a company, you need to understand that you'll be faced with difficult choices. Try to detect the most difficult thing that might happen and that you might need to do, and ask yourself if you'd be okay with doing that. If you are, that's your cue to move forward with the business you're trying to build. Now, before you sign off, don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done that already, so you'll get notified when we publish new episodes. And leave us a review if you enjoyed this podcast and you learned something new. It'll be highly appreciated. Also, if you want to be a guest on the show, shoot me an email or hit me up on LinkedIn. My contact information is down in the description. And that's it. I'm Dorian. You've been listening to Highway to Scale, and I'll see you all in the next episode.